Before I say anything more, I just want to thank Kivos from the bottom of all our hearts for persevering in supporting this seminar against quite a number of odds, both logistical and somewhat political. And it is extremely important and extremely meaningful for citizens around the world who are working very hard to have their voices heard, that organizations like Kivos and I know Open Society Institute is also here, is doing a lot of support also for independent voices around the world, and this support is extremely vital. I want to say that a powerful shift is taking place right now in the information society globally. And I believe that this shift is so powerful that I actually left a very good job as a correspondent and bureau chief for CNN to join in service of what I believe is an emerging global citizens media movement that is going to democratize the global conversation in ways that were not possible before. And in the past, it was the case that if you were an American or a Dutch person and you wanted to understand what a person from Zimbabwe, a person from China, a person from Iran, a person from Malaysia, what they think about what is happening in the world, in their lives, in their countries, you had to wait for someone like me, a journalist, to bother to interview such people and put their quotes in the newspaper or put their sound bites on TV. And unless you were a very rich and global jet setter, you had no other way of understanding what Isaac Mao thinks or what Hussein Darakhshan thinks. But now, thanks to the power of the internet, individual citizens and their voices can circumvent the media gatekeepers and also the government propaganda gatekeepers and can communicate with one another directly. It used to be also that for voices even within countries, for a person in China who wanted their fellow countrymen in another part of the country to know what was going on, if the media didn't report it, it was very difficult for anyone for this information to be communicated. Now, thanks to blogs, weblogs, and internet bulletin boards and other forms of online citizens media, people around the world are putting their points of view, putting up information about their local conditions, sharing not only with their countrymen, with people around the world. And our project, Global Voices Online, is one very humble effort among many to bring attention to these voices. There are many people who, in China, in Iran, in Zimbabwe, in Malaysia, who feel that their situation is not understood, is not properly reported by the media, both domestically and internationally. And they are writing about their situations online. But it's very difficult sometimes for people around the world to find these voices. So our project is to call attention to what we believe are the most meaningful conversations taking place on citizens' media outside the United States and Western Europe, because for the moment anyway, the United States and Western Europe are over-reported, and the voices of people in the first world are much more easily heard through the media than voices of people in the developing world, and so we are focusing on that. But it is vital that the right of people around the globe, not only to speak, but to be heard, must be supported and to really be broadened if we want to achieve a more equitable global information society. And this is something that we must fight for. And the obstacles to a more equitable global information society are not only governments, but also commercial news and information companies that have determined, for various reasons, that the views and the voices of people in certain countries are much more valuable, commercially and otherwise, than the views and voices of people in other countries. And so it is absolutely essential that members of civil society, social entrepreneurs, non-government organizations work very hard to help to equalize the conversation in new ways, using the new tools and the internet being the most powerful way to bring across these voices. Now, there are, of course, a lot of problems with filtering of the internet by governments and by companies. But my colleague, Nard Villeneuve, will be speaking to us later after we've heard from a group of bloggers about their efforts to have their voices heard despite the obstacles that are placed in front of them. We're also going to hear from our colleague about how governments go about censoring the internet, how they go about blocking and filtering websites, how independent voices are prevented from being seen in various countries. And we are pleased to report that he is also going to be explaining to us the latest Tunisia filtering report that has just been released this week, in which the Open Net Initiative, in conjunction with my colleagues at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society, have outlined exactly how the Tunisian government does filter the internet, with a great deal of assistance from software produced by an American company, Secure Computing. The software is called Smart Filter, and without this software, the Tunisian government would not be able to filter the internet to the extent that it currently does. And of course, Tunisia is not unique in its filtering efforts. There is filtering happening around the world. In China, currently China is considered to be, I will show you, this is a block page. When you try to access this particular site here in Tunisia, you get this block. But in China also, this is what the Great Firewall of China looks like from the inside. And this is a Google News search from outside of China when you search for the words Tiananmen Massacre. This is a Google search from inside China when you search for the same words. And all of this is made possible by very sophisticated filtering regimes that are being developed by governments around the world that are spreading, that are becoming more sophisticated. Now, why should people in free societies care about what is happening in these countries? Why should people in free societies care, other than the fact that human rights are being suppressed? We believe this is vitally important. Some have questioned whether this whole seminar, Expression Under Repression, is relevant to the WISIS process of ICT for development, and why is it that Expression Under Repression is relevant to the improvement of people's economic and social well-being. And we believe that it is incredibly critical for that development, particularly today. I think the lessons of development aid have shown that without individual empowerment, without individual initiative, development is not sustainable, that individuals need the information to improve their lives, to conduct business, and to bring about change to their communities. And we have found that while some governments argue that only economic information is necessary, it's fine to filter political information because, you know, that's not necessary for people to improve their livelihoods. Actually, that's not the case. We've seen situations, for instance, in China with the SARS epidemic, where there was a media ban on information when SARS first broke out in 2002. And then citizens did not know to protect themselves. They did not know what to do. The epidemic spread more quickly. People were trying to get the information out through the internet and so forth, but there was also a government crackdown on that. And the fact that individuals are not able to share information about their local conditions, about what the government is and is not doing about their livelihoods, can impact lives. It's not just a matter of separating economic and political information. Also, there are many situations in many countries, in China, again, another example, where a local, a village in southern China, the villagers were trying to recall their village chief for corruption. And they were suppressed by the local authorities. And people were trying to put information out about this on the internet so that the villagers could get support against corruption in villages, so that there could be a bit more of a movement against local corruption, which, of course, makes it more difficult for people to advance their own livelihoods. But the government determined that it was socially, shall we say, not in the regime's interest for the information about corruption and anti-corruption in these villages to be disseminated, and basically discussion now on the internet about that anti-corruption movement has been banned. But I believe, and I think many of my colleagues also believe, that the fact that people are not able to share information or are not able to advance anti-corruption movements locally does impact development. And so therefore censorship is very much connected with impeding ICT for development. And this is something that I think, obviously, there are governments who disagree with this, but if we are looking at a situation where people really need to be empowered to improve their own lives, they need information, they need freedom of access of information, they need the freedom to get their voices heard so that change can be implemented. Now, the other point I want to make is that while these examples are coming from non-democratic developing nations, those of us in Western democracies should not sit back with self-satisfied complacency and just lecture our Iranian and Chinese friends about what it's like to be in a free country with a free internet, because it's not so simple. Our own freedom of expression and freedom to access information, we need to maximize our own well-being in countries that we call democracies, is also under threat in many cases, or certainly cannot be taken for granted. We have situations with public libraries in the United States where teenagers cannot access information about reproductive health because the local school board has determined it is politically inadvisable for teenage girls to have the information they need about their various reproductive health options. This, I would say, this type of censorship, I would say, and many would agree, is an impediment to the people's ability to empower themselves, to inform themselves, to improve their own lives. This is one example. There are many cases like this throughout the Western world, throughout democratic countries. And at the core, what we have is a lack of transparency, a lack of accountability in the way in which decisions about filtering and censorship are made. The fact that citizens, not only in China and Iran, do not know who is deciding to censor what and how it's being implemented and what the block lists are, but in communities in the West, in so-called democratic nations, people are equally in the dark. Certainly, it's not as extreme, but there are some similarities in terms of people just do not know why and how their information is being controlled. And while it is unrealistic to demand that there should be zero filtering anywhere, after all, filtering is necessary to keep spam out. Filtering is necessary to protect our underage children from pornographic material. Filtering is necessary in some cases to keep to prevent our underage teenagers from being incited to kill, to violent acts. There are situations where filtering arguably is necessary. However, we must demand globally that when filtering happens, it must be done openly and accountably. companies that are selling, implementing, servicing technology that provides filtering must be open and accountable about the way in which this is being done. We must demand that technology companies make it clear what they are doing, in what countries, and how. We must demand more openness from companies like Secure Computing, from Cisco Systems with its routers throughout the world, from Yahoo, from Google, from all of these countries that in different ways are, and at different levels and to different degrees, are complying with local requests of censorship and are not, in many cases, being open about the way in which users' ability to access information is being constrained. So, just to conclude, today's seminar is about expression under repression. It's about the most extreme cases in governments that are widely considered to be repressive. But the issue of censorship and filtering touches us all. And tomorrow, when we attend this seminar conducted by my colleague Ethan Zuckerman, and he teaches us how to blog anonymously, how to communicate securely, if we're not vigilant, perhaps we may all need those skills one day. Thank you very much.